Speaking now with Dave Lindorf, can you tell us about the significance of the latest court decision in Mumia's case?
Yeah, the Third Circuit, which oversees the federal courts in the Mid-East Coast region and is centered in Philadelphia, a three-judge panel ruled on three claims of constitutional violations made by Mumia and his attorneys, of his 1982 trial, and then also a appeal by the district attorney of the federal court decision made back in 2001, which had thrown out his death sentence. And so what they did was they rejected all three claims of constitutional violations at his conviction, and they upheld the overturning of his death sentence. That, however, does not even assure that he won't get a death sentence, because it could come back in two different ways. If the district attorney appeals it to the Supreme Court, it could be reinstated, the death sentence. And at the same time, if they don't appeal it, they have the right to have a retrial just on the penalty. And the three things they considered were, one, whether the judge showed rampant bias in the post-conviction hearing that was held in 1995 on the case. It was a fact-finding review. And, of course, he did show rampant bias at that event, so much so that even the local papers, which had been very negative about Jamal, editorialized that the judge had was shaming the court. They considered the issue of whether his fair trial had been jeopardized by a summation statement to the jury just before they were considering their verdict, at which he told them that they shouldn't worry too much about whether they had doubts about his guilt, because he would get appeal after appeal after appeal. And one judge raised questions about this at the hearing. Obviously, that subverted the whole concept of justice, which is guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, because he was telling him it's okay to have a reasonable doubt, because, you know, he'll go ahead and vote him guilty because it won't be the last decision. And the third one was that he was asking for his trial to be overturned on the grounds that the prosecutor used race to disqualify qualified jurors from sitting on the jury panel. And in fact, McGill threw 10 black jurors out of consideration who had already said they could vote for a death penalty, and he only threw 5 white jurors off, which is about consistent with what he did at most trials. The interesting thing about all this is that one judge, Thomas Ambrose, who was a Clinton appointee to the bench, the other two were Reagan appointees, the Clinton appointee wrote a 41-page dissent in an entire ruling which was only 118 pages. So a third of the ruling was his dissent. And in that dissent, he really castigated the other two judges and said that their ruling on the jury issue was made no sense at all and flew in the face of precedents by the Third Circuit itself. The Third Circuit has ruled repeatedly that a plaintiff only has to show a single juror was thrown out because of race to have their trial thrown out. And yet he says in Jamal's case, we're setting a new precedent. And so I wrote a piece saying that this is now, they've now taken Philadelphia jurisprudence and moved it into the federal courts with this what's called the Mumia exception, because repeatedly in Pennsylvania courts they have changed their rules just for Abu Jamal, so where they would grant new trials for other people, when it would come to Jamal's trial, the appellate courts in the state of Pennsylvania would say, no, we're not going to turn this one over, and they would change the rule. And then after his case, the next case that came down the pike with the same situation, they would change it back and overturn the trial. So they have this Mumia exception, and now the appellate court of the Third Circuit is doing the same thing.
When you were talking about the instructions given to the jury, it reminds me of some of the interviews we've done recently with people related to those in Guantanamo, how the so-called trials that they have are being, they're being told, well, it doesn't matter whether there's evidence that this person did it. Just think about whether you think this person is capable of doing something like this, which obviously goes against any kind of previous way of doing trials. Do you think that this Mumia exception that you talk about could be applied in other cases or is being applied?
Well, that's the risk. And you know, the hope here that some people are holding out is, that I've talked to, is that Mumia's attorney is going to bring this to the full Third Circuit. There's 17 judges on the Third Circuit, and they can do what they call an en banc review, in which all the judges on the Third Circuit, except those who have some conflict, like Ed Rendell's wife, would be recused, and the entire panel can look at the decision of the three judges and they can overturn it. There's a lot of attorneys who are urging them to do that because what they've established now is really in violation of even Supreme Court precedent on the Batson issue of, you know, the right to have jurors without discrimination because of race or religion. So, they really threw justice back about 21 years to an old day when you used to be able to throw jurors off because they were black. And I don't think that the full court may want to establish that precedent. The problem is, you know, we're dealing with a case that's highly charged politically, that, you know, it's not only a black guy who killed a white cop, supposedly, but who is a known leftist, not only from before the incident when he had been a member of the Black Panthers, he'd been a supporter of the MOVE organization, and subsequently from jail, he writes critiques from a left perspective that are published, you know, in the newspapers and aired on radio. So you have a political figure and also a black man convicted of killing a white cop. And it takes a lot of guts from on a part of judges to do justice in a case like this. And I was actually quite impressed with the courage of Judge Ambrose in writing this dissent. He actually said, why are we not according the courtesy of our precedents to this one case? He really laid it out that they are using different justice for this man than for all the other people that they see in court. It's a horrible scandal, and hopefully it'll be rectified by the full appellate court, although, you know, precedent doesn't suggest that they will.
So, now, my understanding was that this was sort of his last appeal. So you're saying that there's another step that he's going to go through?
Oh, this is going to go on and on. Because for one thing, if the district attorney decides to call, you know, first of all, I think they'll go to the Supreme Court and they'll try to get his death penalty overturned. The Supreme Court probably won't take the case. They don't have to take an appeal case. But that'll take a year or so. For just to put it up there and have them consider it. Once they, if they take it, I suspect they would uphold it. I mean, it was a well-reasoned opinion by the federal judge who overturned the death penalty. So I don't think that, I think they'll just confirm it, that he doesn't have the death penalty. And at that point, it goes back down to the DA. From that moment, they have 180 days to decide whether to ask for impaneling a new jury to try him again on the death penalty and try to get it reinstated that way by a new jury. If they do that, then things get interesting because Jamal's attorney is allowed to bring in new witnesses, even to raise the issue of absolute innocence, not to get his conviction overturned, but to show that he shouldn't be put to death. Now, there are new witnesses in this case. And there are witnesses who've changed their testimony. So it's possible that they would be able to introduce such powerful new evidence of his innocence that he could then go back to the state courts and say, you need to reopen this because we have new evidence of innocence.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with us. Again, I've been speaking with Dave Lindorf, who is a journalist, writes for Counterpunch as well as other publications. And
if I could give the name of my website and my book on the case, it might be useful to people because I've got a lot of stuff on the website, which is thiscan'tbehappening.net.
Thank you very much
for having me on.
This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.